What's ordinary to one person can be extraordinary to another.
What is it that is ordinary that can be extraordinary to someone else?
I'm Joanna.
And I'm Sung-hee. And this is K-Drama Chat, where we will take our favorite Korean dramas, also known as K-Dramas, and recap and analyze each episode. Today, we'll be discussing episode 4 of Startup, the hit K-drama on Netflix starring Bae Suji as Seo Dalmi, Nam Joo Hyuk as Nam Do Sun, Kim Sun Ho as Han Ji Pyeong, Kang Ha Na as Won In Jae, and Kim Hye Suk as Choi Won Dok. We'll also discuss Nam Joo Hyuk, the actor who plays Nam Do Sun.
Let's recap episode 4 titled Sandbox.
Eager applicants gather at Sandbox, posting their dreams on hundreds of notes in the lobby. Nam Do Sun realizes that computer code might seem complete, but one bug can still crash the program. He had overlooked the condition that Sandbox is everyone's dream, leading to the dilemma that he is now forced to choose between the two sisters, Seo Dalmi and Won In Jae. This was the bug that caused him to crash.
Seo Dalmi works hard brainstorming a variety of ideas for a new business, reminding her grandmother of her father's ill-fated efforts. Choi Won-dok worries about how difficult it is to start a business, but Dalmi is undeterred. Meanwhile, Won Sang-soo realizes that he is missing several members of his team at the company. But it turns out that these members have resigned to follow Won In Jae in her new venture, which she now conducts from her mother's hotel suite. In Jae is determined to succeed on her own without leaning on her father's money or connections. She resents her mother for worrying about her, while her mother offered encouragement to her sister Dalmi.
Seo Dalmi, as well as Nam Do Sun and his partners, shop for guides on Sandbox at the bookstore. Seo Dalmi runs into Nam Do Sun, who is now in his usual disheveled state. She is surprised to hear that he has no plans for the following day, which is supposed to be his birthday. Recalling what he had written in one of his letters, she promises that on his birthday, she will make his wish come true. On impulse, he chases down her bus to sit down next to her. Dalmi notices how big his hands are compared to hers, laying her hand in his.
Nam Do Sun returns to the Samsung Tech office to find swarms of interested investors attracted by the news of their Coda win. While they are impressed with their technology, all the investors lose interest since there is no plan to generate revenue. The only ones who linger turn out to be other developers trying to steal Samsung's tech secrets until Han Ji-pyeong arrives to kick them out. He scolds the Samsung Tech partners for being naive and gullible. But when Lee Chul-sun asks why he has to be so harsh, Han Ji-pyeong responds that unlike the investors who left, he is asking the hard questions because he is actually interested in their business.
Nam Do-sun confesses to Han Ji-pyeong that he ran into Seo Dalmi earlier that day. She promised to make his wish come true on his birthday. Han Ji-pyeong admits that it is his birthday the next day, but he doesn't remember what he said his wish was. The tables are turned when Nam Do-sun's partners complain that Nam Do-sun is inconvenienced by dealing with Seo Dalmi, all for Han Ji-pyeong's sake.
Seo Dalmi prepares excitedly for Nam Do-sun's birthday, making a list of what they are going to do. Meanwhile, Han Ji-pyeong gets Nam Do-sun dressed up in a new suit and lends him an expensive watch. He gives him a lesson on fine dining, although Do-sun is a hopeless student. The three Samsung Tech partners have never dated since women were scarce in the engineering department at university. In an effort to meet women, Chul-sun and Yong-sun even started a knitting club. But the only one who joined was Nam Do-sun, who chased all the women away with his lame jokes.
As Dalmi leaves to celebrate Nam Do-sun's birthday, her grandmother gives her a bag containing a gift for the Nam Do-sun of the old days. Meanwhile, Han Ji-pyeong coaches a nervous Nam Do-sun on the phone as he waits outside to pick up Dalmi. To fulfill Do-sun's birthday wish, they need to go somewhere indoors to play the game Ghost Hop, prompting a frantic effort to transform Han Ji-pyeong's apartment yet again into the Samsung Tech office.
When Dalmi and Dosan arrive at Han Ji-pyeong's apartment turned Samsung Tech office, Han Ji-pyeong still doesn't remember what he had wished for years earlier until Dalmi unpacks the bag from her grandmother full of tasty food. 15 years earlier at Chuseok, watching the broadcasts of families enjoying time together, he had written that his wish was to play Gostap with his whole family. Dalmi recognizes that wishes that might seem trivial to some can be meaningful to those who have them. She looks at Dosan as she says this, but the message resonated with Han Ji-pyeong. The game is lively, though underlying tension grows between Nam Dosan and Han Ji-pyeong.
Nam Dosan takes Seo Dalmi home at the end of the day. He asks her to thank her grandmother for the delicious food, but bows out of seeing her in person, since he actually has never met her. Before she goes in, he asks her what it was that she likes about him. His heart sinks when all the reasons have nothing to do with him, but with the letters Han Ji-pyeong had written years ago, except for the fact that he has nice hands.
Dalmi goes in and gets the happy surprise that she's passed the first round of sandbox to enter the hackathon. Nam Dosan, sitting in the borrowed convertible, wearing the expensive watch that is not his, also sees the notification from Sandbox that he has passed the first round. Working with her team at her mother's hotel suite, Won In-jae as well sees the same message on her phone.
Han Ji-pyeong checks with Tae Won-duk to make sure that Dalmi got home safely. She is grateful for all he's done, but worried that Dalmi will just end up getting hurt. Han Ji-pyeong assures her that he will make sure that doesn't happen. Meanwhile, Dalmi continues to work on startup ideas and finds her father's old notes for his proposed business. Dosan returns to Han Ji-pyeong's apartment to hand over the watch and the car keys. Han Ji-pyeong tells him to keep the suits, but Nam Dosan refuses. He will overcome his lack of style himself and buy his own clothes. He wants to learn from Han Ji-pyeong, not accept his charity. Han Ji-pyeong tells him, bluntly, that he's not cut out to be the CEO of his company and he should recruit someone else for the job.
Seo Dalmi goes to church to pray, offering up all her hopes and dreams before entering Sandbox. Nam Dosan talks to his parents about the three-day hackathon that he is about to enter, his father still skeptical but his mother encouraging. Won In-jae arrives at Sandbox but finds the two of her staff have left the team, judging that continuing to work for her was too risky. Dalmi thinks she catches sight of her sister but shrugs it off since In-jae is supposed to be in the U.S. Throughout the Sandbox lobby, the words "follow your dream" are inspiring to both Dalmi and Dosan.
The chairperson of Sandbox, Yoon Sun-hak, welcomes the assembled applicants and explains how Sandbox has become the largest startup accelerating center in Asia. The first step in the competition is to select 40 out of the 400 applicants to be designated CEOs. These CEOs will then form teams to compete in the three-day hackathon. Five teams will be chosen by investors to be officially accepted into Sandbox. The competition is live-streamed and viewed anxiously by Choi Won-duk, Dalmi and In-jae's mother, and Han Ji-pyeong.
The initial competition consists of a list of words that are currently trending in business and society. Those who are able to list the highest number of keywords relevant to these terms will be selected as CEOs. Han Ji-pyeong is startled to see Seo Dalmi among the applicants, who are all feverishly searching for related words to the topics that flash on the big screen. Dalmi is thrilled to be among the winners, which also include Won In-jae, but none of the Samsung Tech members. Dosan sees Dalmi up among the winners on the stage and recalls Han Ji-pyeong's painful advice that he look for another CEO. Dalmi confronts her sister about why she is there instead of returning to the U.S., but In-jae just points out that her supposedly successful boyfriend is also a Sandbox applicant.
The designated CEOs are given 1 hour to assemble their teams for the upcoming hackathon. Dalmi finds Dosan and asks why he is there, and he can only apologize for deceiving her. In-jae mocks them both, one for being fooled and the other for being caught, exposing that Samsung Tech's only credentials are winning the Coda contest. But Dalmi sees this as the unexpected answer to her prayer, that she find a companion to travel with her through the difficult road ahead. She asks Dosan to recruit her as the CEO of Samsung Tech. In-jae then steps in and offers to recruit the Samsung Tech team to replace the developers that she lost. She is a CEO with experience, unlike her sister.
Chul-san and Yong-san pull Do-san away to discuss the decision, urging him to make a rational, non-emotional choice. But his head and heart say the same thing. One candidate asked them to recruit her, while the other offered to recruit them. He leaves the decision up to his friends. Nam Do-san walks back up to the two sisters. He extends his hand to So Dal-mi and asks, "Will you be the CEO of Samsung Tech?" "Gladly," she answers, taking his hand.
Earlier during the game of Go Stop, the AI speaker Yong-shil had interjected with another prediction, this time that ends with a warning. You may run into someone you met briefly in the past at an unexpected place. That person might seem at first like a spring breeze, but may turn into a strong winter wind and change your life completely. At Incheon Airport, the Korean-American board member from Coda arrives.
Wow. Annyeong, Sung-hee.
Annyeong, Joanna.
Sung-hee, the first snow has arrived in Korea.
Oh, wow.
It was all over Instagram. Ugh. We have to remind our listeners about the Korean superstition that whoever you spend the first snow with will be your love for a long time, perhaps forever. So I bet there were a lot of couples out during that first snowfall, which happened a few days ago. And, you know, the first snow happened here in the D.C. area, and I went out with my hubs.
Wow. You know, we haven't even gotten snow yet, and we're so much farther north than you.
Oh, my God, really?
Yes.
We had it in D.C., but you haven't had any in Rhode Island?
No, I think there were some in Massachusetts, which is north of us, but not here in Providence.
Wow.
Well, that superstition definitely exists in the world of K-dramas, and certainly being out in the first snow is very romantic. And what about the news that Netflix has just purchased Warner Brothers? Who would ever have thought that a company that started out as a DVD rental company would buy one of the largest movie studios in the world? But the way media has changed, I actually see Netflix as being more significant than Warner Brothers these days, so I'm not as surprised as I might be. I watch Netflix regularly, but it's been a long time since I've gone to the movies.
Yeah, you know, that news took my breath away. New media just ate old media. And I don't know if this is actually true, but you get the sense that Warner Brothers creates American movies and markets those movies to the world, while Netflix has a global strategy for content that is created for the different markets. I mean, I think this personalization strategy for the different markets around the world is what's making Netflix so dominant. But what do I know? And hey, in other news, IU and Park Bo-gum won Best Couple in the Asia Artists Award a couple of nights ago, I think.
Wow.
And this is for their roles in When Life Gives You Tangerines.
Yes, of course. Well, we know them well from that. Well, as far as Netflix, I think they were quite astute getting into the production side of entertainment, as opposed to just being a conduit for entertainment. And if they hadn't done that, they would have gone the way of Blockbuster Video. They also got into streaming early. So I think staying current with technology has really served them well.
Sung-hee, I read an article a long time ago about how Netflix was diving into their analytics. And they realized that rom-coms, this is many years ago now, maybe 10, 15 years ago, they realized that rom-coms were really, really popular, as in people were watching them repeatedly. But here was the problem. The studios weren't making rom-coms. That's part of why they got into production, because they said, this is popular, but we're not getting this new content.
Interesting. Well, before we get started with our discussion, I want to call out the comments on the 13.2 episode. There was a lively discussion about episode 2 of Startup, and there were fantastic comments about the actors, the sisters, the Han Ji-pyeong character, and so much more. It's worth a visit to kdramachat.com to see the comments.
I also want to comment on a couple of things that we did not cover last week because the episode was just getting too long. Remember when So Dal-mi brought Nam Do-san a money plant? You know, when I was listening to the episode, I thought, duh, we should have talked about that. In Korea, a money plant, actually all over Asia, typically refers to a plant believed to bring wealth, prosperity, and good luck. And the idea of money plants is heavily influenced by feng shui, which is practiced in Korea as well as China. Plants with round leaves, lush growth, and ease of care are thought to attract positive energy and wealth. These money plants are a common gift for business owners, especially new businesses or businesses moving to a new location. So I got a money plant, you know, when I moved, and I got a money plant when I started my company.
Oh, nice. Wow. Ease of care would definitely be an attractive aspect for me. I think it would be a bad omen because I'd probably kill every money plant I ever got. Well, also, let's talk about the significance of Wan In-jae cutting her hair. So cutting her hair on the surface looks like an act of defiance. She wants to start fresh with a new look. But there are historical echoes to what she did. During the Joseon Dynasty, people never cut their hair unless absolutely necessary, because Confucian teachings saw the body, including hair, as a sacred gift from one's parents. So cutting your hair was considered an act of rebellion, disgrace, or a spiritual detachment. So when In-jae asked the stylist to cut off her long hair, is she rejecting the wealth and identity she gained through her stepfather? Wan In-jae isn't just starting over. You could see that she's severing ties, literally and culturally. Though on the other hand, I also wonder how deep this feeling runs in this 21st century, because it's been at least a century since people in Korea followed the traditional customs about their hair. But it certainly indicates a transformation in who she is and where she's going.
You know, that's an interesting observation. We never really know what the writer intended with the haircut. We can only guess at the writer's intention, but what a great connection. All right, well, on to episode 4. But first, let's stop to appreciate the songs we heard during the recap, and we heard two. I Know by Sung-hee, Ji-ho, and Yubin, and Let's Go to Sandbox by Kim Dong-yuk. Now, Sung-hee, I had a tough time finding information about these artists, and I will admit to not having a lot of time this week to research the artists, but I will rectify that next week. But for now, I'll just say that I'm loving the OST for this K-drama.
Yes, I really like the instrumentals in this show because they're so evocative of the nervous energy that these aspiring entrepreneurs have.
Yeah. So Sung-hee, what did you think of this episode?
Well, all of our characters are becoming more invested in each other, especially the three in our triangle of Seodalmi, Nam Do-san, and Han Ji-pyeong. They are also inspiring each other to make the most of themselves, centering around applying for Sandbox.
This was another packed episode, and the story is moving along. We're only on episode 4. The three leads have all made it to the next round at Sandbox. Nam Do-san has admitted that he's not a hotshot CEO with a fancy office and a successful company, and somehow Seodalmi understands. I'm also really stressed that this fiction with the letters is going to unravel and blow up in a big way.
That's true. Well, you know, they say that it's always best to tell the truth because it's the easiest story to remember.
100%.
And when you're trying so hard to maintain a fiction, then you're bound to mess up somewhere.
Well, and now the fiction is just kind of going in different places and involves a lot of people.
And getting way more complicated.
No, exactly.
Well, let's start talking about Sandbox, the accelerator that is accepting applications for entrepreneurs wishing to join the residency program. We learned that hundreds of people apply, and then 400 people make it to the first round. Of the 400, 40 CEOs are selected. The CEOs form teams, and then 5 of these teams will ultimately be accepted into the program. So now we've seen the CEO selection, and the CEOs are now in the process of forming their teams. So in the show, it looks like Sandbox is located on an island in the middle of the Han River. So we got curious, and it turns out this island is real. Nodal Island is a small artificial island located near Seoul's financial hub, Yeouido. It's surrounded by the Han River that flows through the city and is filled with lush trees and open spaces. Now, while Sandbox is a tech accelerator, Nodal Island is a cultural space filled with cafes, galleries, bookstores, and sound stages. So it's definitely another place to put on the list to visit in Seoul.
Yeah, 100%. I want to comment about how Sandbox reminds me of the dot-com era of the early 2000s. You know, in an earlier episode, we saw people walking into Sandbox with their dogs. Everyone's dressed in jeans. They're happy. They're chatting. When I first started my company, I tried really hard to create a really fun atmosphere that was very much in keeping with the times. We had a casual dress code. We had a purple pool table in the lobby.
Of course you did.
And we allowed dogs to come to the office, among other crazy things. And that's a topic for another story about how we ended up with dogs at the office. At one point, we had a golden retriever, a black lab, two chihuahuas, some mixed breed brown dog, and a terrier. They came in every day. And the black lab would come in every morning. Her name was Daisy. She would get off the elevator and she'd walk the entire office and poke her nose into every office. And then the golden retriever was so friendly that people would borrow the dog and take her out on walks when they needed a break. Or they would just kind of, I don't know, roll around on the floor with the golden retriever. It was really fun to have dogs in the office. Of course, now with everyone working from home, we don't have dogs, but it is common to hear dogs barking and to see dogs and cats on the Zooms, including children, by the way. It's allowed like all kinds of things. I actually even have an employee who has birds, and sometimes she'll have a bird on her shoulder and you can hear the birds in the background.
Wow. That sounds really fun. Well, you know, they have actually started letting therapy dogs come visit at the hospital.
Oh.
There's this one lady who brings in her two golden retrievers, and I always have to stop to say hello. Well, let's do some terminology. The very start of the episode, Namdo-san defined the word bug as an error in the source code. Now, we're all familiar with this word. When we encounter a problem with software, we call it a bug.
I want to dive into the origin of the word bug. Because, you know, I was like, where did this come from? And there's stories about, you know, the computer with the moth. Turns out the word bug has old roots, appearing in Middle English, and it's called buggy. I don't know if that's how you pronounce it, B-U-G-G-E. And it was really meant to be used for frightening things. And then the inventor, Thomas Edison, used the word bug to describe little things that malfunction. And then the term became famous in computing in 1947 when a moth was found stuck in the malfunctioning Harvard Mark II computer. And the logbook from that time is now in the Smithsonian Museum. It has the moth taped onto the logbook, and it's classified as the first actual case of a bug being found.
Wow, that's a great story.
Yeah.
Well, let's start with the opening scene. Sodalmi is working on her application to be part of the 12th residency program of Sandbox. She's brainstorming with her grandmother. One of her ideas is a co-working kitchen, not a restaurant, but it's a place where you can cook and deliver your food from. So you wouldn't need a lot of startup money because the kitchen facilities would all be available. Now, it's actually not a bad idea, and I think these actually do exist, used primarily for catering, food trucks, and food artisans. And Dolly's ideas, many of them are actually now realized today. So she mentioned biometric scanners to start your car, and the Genesis GV60 actually does come with facial recognition to unlock your car.
No kidding.
Yes, it's a real thing.
Huh.
And there are many cars today that are connected to personal cell phones, which can be used instead of car keys. So my car works that way, which is extremely convenient, except on a couple of occasions when it doesn't.
Right. Like when your phone dies.
No, usually it's when I get like a phone systems upgrade, then it gets out of sync with the car. I know. Then I'm locked out. It's very annoying. Well, in the process of brainstorming with the grandmother remembers when her son was first working on his business ideas. Now, remember that his idea was to build a food delivery website that aggregated the menus of different restaurants, including introducing a rating system. So presumably, you could order from multiple places. And that exists today as well.
Right. The scene transitions to one where the father and Sodalmi are looking really grim and really sad. Sodalmi asks her father what they're going to do. He looks like he's out of options, but he says, it'll be okay. So we don't really know what the circumstances are of that situation. I think this is when they were almost out of money and their house is about to be foreclosed on. And I bet this is when the grandmother decided to pull out all of her money from the savings account to give her son so he wouldn't lose his house. So this would also be around the time that Han Ji-pyeong broke with the grandmother and then left for university.
Yes. And I was wondering if it might have been the time when Dalmi's parents were in the middle of their divorce and the mother and In-jae were moving out.
Ah.
So either way, it was clearly a painful time. Elsewhere, we learn that Won In-jae is also working on her application to Sandbox. Now, she's actually lured away four people from Nature Morning, to the great surprise of her stepbrother, who finds out that he's lost four key members of his team. So this is interesting, because it takes a lot for people to leave a stable job for something uncertain and without a promise of pay for a while. Won In-jae must be a good CEO for them to do this. We see that she's using her mother's hotel suite for her meetings and planning. So this is quite the hotel suite, by the way. Her mother, of course, does not seem to be happy about it. Maybe because she's mad that Won In-jae broke with her stepfather. Also, all of a sudden, her private luxury hotel suite has been taken over as an office space. And the mother thinks Won In-jae is being stupid. Won In-jae is walking away from money and connections. She says that people without money and connections apply to be part of Sandbox. But Won In-jae has money and connections, so why is she doing this?
I think it's because Won In-jae is suffering from a big case of imposter syndrome. There are enough people who wonder if her success is only because she's the stepdaughter of a wealthy and a successful chaebol. She wants to do it on her own. Now, to be honest, I think she's being a little naive here because nobody makes it on their own. It's not a case where only people with money and connections make it, because if you don't have money but you're smart, you can use your connections and your network to create opportunities. I mean, I think about my first customers who were referrals from my sister and a very good friend, and they were doing this as a favor. I mean, I could have said, no, I'm going to do this on my own, but turning my back on those referrals because I wanted to do things on my own, that would have been dumb. But I understand. Won In-jae has something to prove.
Well, I don't think it's just connections. I think it's about having powerful, rich connections, which is something her stepfather represents. Well, let's talk about the mother for a moment. Won In-jae asks if the reason her mother is not divorced yet is so that she can continue to give Won In-jae money and connections. And she says this accusingly, because Won In-jae is determined to succeed without the benefit of money or connections. But I also thought this was a bit hypocritical, since she's using her mother's spacious luxury hotel suite as her office.
Right.
A hotel suite that is paid for by her stepfather. So I didn't quite understand that at all. We also learned that Won In-jae has really conflicting emotions about her mother, not unlike Seo Dalmi. Won In-jae accuses her mother of worrying about her, but encouraging her sister. I think she's resentful because her mother worrying about her might mean that she has doubts about her ability to succeed. Whereas she's encouraging to her sister Dalmi, as in she's optimistic that Dalmi will succeed.
I think the mother was just trying to give what she thought each daughter needed. I mean, if you think about it, Seo Dalmi had not made much of her life, so she needs encouragement. Won In-jae, on the other hand, has just left the safety of her father's company, so perhaps what she needs is worry and caution. When the mom said to Seo Dalmi, "I'm rooting for you," I think Won In-jae interpreted this as the mother siding with Seo Dalmi, but I don't think that was the case. I don't see the mom siding with one daughter over another. That just doesn't make sense. I think the mom has a strained relationship with Won In-jae, but it's still a relationship. Whereas the mother doesn't have a relationship at all with Seo Dalmi, so of course the mother is going to reach out to Seo Dalmi in a different way. But now that Won In-jae is striking out on her own, she feels like she needs encouragement, just like her sister. Boy, we got two sisters sailing off without a map. Although I would argue that Won In-jae has a huge advantage over her sister. She still has money. She has connections, even though she says she doesn't want to use them. She has experience running a company, and she's got people who are loyal to her and believe in her. I mean, those four who said, yeah, we'll leave Nature Morning and come work for you even without the promise of pay right away. So unfortunately, the mom is kind of stuck between the two. I think she can't win, and I feel a little bad for her.
Well, I think Won In-jae also has history with her mother. They've lived together and presumably have had their share of disagreements. And her mother would know where NJ has strengths and also weaknesses. And so she would know when and how to worry about her. But the mother doesn't have this history with Dalmi at this point. They haven't been together for years. So I think Dalmi to her is more of a blank slate. So she can't say much more than be encouraging.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Well, let's talk about the last group trying to get into Sandbox, and that's Samsung Tech. Getting into Sandbox is clearly a big enough deal that there are books at the bookstore about it. And that's when Nam Do-sun and So Dal-mi meet again. And it's funny because they're both trying to keep up this charade. So Nam Do-sun is wearing his usual flannel shirt, and he's quite rumpled. So he makes the excuse that he slept over at Chul-sun's house, and that's why he's dressed that way. He borrowed clothes from Chul-sun, and he doesn't have his nice car. So it's getting harder and harder to maintain this charade. And Chul-sun is increasingly amazed at his friend's ability to lie and do it convincingly. Chul-sun calls him shameless and quick-witted. Who is this friend of his? He has changed so much. And poor Chul-sun, he's being blamed for Nam Do-sun's messy appearance.
Right. Well, let's turn to the birthday celebration. So Dal-mi thinks Nam Do-sun's birthday is the next day. She's like, what are you doing tomorrow? And he says, oh, what do you mean? And she says, it's your birthday. And she thinks this because in their letter exchange, Han Ji-pyeong had said that his birthday was coming up. And it turned out that that was really Han Ji-pyeong's real birthday. So Han Ji-pyeong in one of the letters had expressed that he wanted to play ghost stomp with his family and friends. So Dal-mi plans a whole birthday event. Grandma packs food, and So Dal-mi packs her ghost stop cards and a blanket. Meanwhile, Nam Do-sun gets all dressed up again, courtesy of Han Ji-pyeong, who got him a suit that fits him this time so the pants aren't too short. Nam Do-sun actually comments on how the pants are not too short, unlike last time, and this, of course, insults Han Ji-pyeong. Remember? He's like, I'm not that much shorter than you.
But I thought the suit he borrowed was from his friends, not from Han Ji-pyeong.
No, but he also borrowed a suit when they were pretending that his apartment
Oh, right.
Was the Samsung Tech office.
Because the short suit that we saw was at the networking party.
Yes, but maybe the other suit was short as well.
Okay.
By the way, Nam Joo-hyuk is close to 6'2", and Kim Son-ho is 6 feet tall. So Han Ji-pyeong is right that Nam Do-sun is only a little bit taller. But, you know, a couple inches makes a difference. But you know how guys are, Sanghee? They're so sensitive about height. My older son lamented for so long that he was short, and then he sprouted his junior year in high school. He's now 6'1", and now he complains about being on an airplane and how he can't drive my Miata with the top up. And I say, CJ, sometimes you got to be careful what you ask for. But guys in height, you know, they're sensitive about it.
Yeah, I think overall, he's probably not complaining that much.
That's true.
Well, anyway, Nam Do-sun has no idea what So Dal-mi has planned. So he keeps asking Han Ji-pyeong to try to remember what his wish was. And Han Ji-pyeong can't remember what he wrote to So Dal-mi so many years ago about his birthday wish. So Dal-mi tells Nam Do-sun that they have to go somewhere indoors, since the plan is to play Go Stop, which is a card game. Han Ji-pyeong calls the Samsung Tech boys, and once again, they set up shop in his luxury apartment. So now, all five of them are playing Ghost Stop in Han Ji-pyeong's apartment.
Good grief. How can they keep up this charade? They keep having to, like, set up shop in his apartment.
Yes, that's right. They're frantically trying to plug in all the computers.
And Han Ji-pyeong is not being helpful.
Right. Well, he doesn't know where all those plugs go.
Well, Sung-hee, tell us about the game that they play, Ghost Stop.
Well, I've never played this game myself. Though we did have several sets of these cards when I was growing up. The game is played using these cards that have various flower symbols on them, and I think it consists of creating sets based on the different figures on the cards. Low-level gambling is often part of the game, using very small amounts of money. And the game, interesting, is relatively recent in origin and only started in the 1960s.
You know, I think this card game has an equivalent in Japan. I showed my husband the game and he said, I think it's Hanafuda. And we have a set of Hanafuda cards, Hanafuda or flower cards are traditional Japanese playing cards featuring seasonal flowers instead of numbers. The deck has 48 ornate cards tied to the months of the year. And here's a fun fact. Nintendo actually started out in the 1800s as a company making Hanafuda cards. So maybe these cards came from Japan, Sunghee.
Actually, I've read about GoStop, and the cards themselves originated earlier, but the game itself started in the 1960s.
Oh.
And the cards came from a Japanese design, but they were something else. And then I think Hanafuda actually came from the Watu cards that they use to play GoStop in Korea.
Oh, interesting, huh?
So it's been traded back and forth between Japan and Korea.
Hmm. Well, we have a deck at home, although I don't know how to play the game. Maybe I'll bring the cards with me when we go to California for Christmas, and I'll ask my husband to teach the family.
Oh, that's a good idea. And you can play GoStop with your family over the holidays.
Right. I'll take pictures.
That's right. Well, the fiction that this is the Samsung Tech office is getting harder to maintain. When the AI speaker Youngshil starts to talk, Han Jinpyeong starts to comment, but Sodalmi looks at him as if to say, "Why are you saying something?" And then the two men cover it up because it's starting to get awkward. And as they start to play the game, Han Jinpyeong remembers his wish and why he made it. He remembers the time when he wished that he had a family to play games with, just like he saw on television during Chuseok. For him, it was actually having the family to do familiar activities that he wished for. Not so much playing GoStop itself, which is, I think, why it took him a moment for him to remember. And now playing this card game with this group is making him wistful.
Well, So Dalmi and the boys wonder about this wish of Nam Do-san to play GoStop together. But like you said, it's Han Ji-pyeong's wish, so he comments when So Dalmi asks questions. But here's the thing, So Dalmi is so kind and thoughtful that it makes Han Ji-pyeong look at her differently, I think. So is he remembering her sweetness from all those years, or is he getting to know her for the first time, really, or getting to know her again? By the way, we thought that the letters were mostly dictated by the grandmother, but we see him writing a letter to So Dalmi on his own, and this is when he talks about his birthday and his birthday wish of playing GoStop with his family. So we see that at least some of what was written in the letters did come from Han Ji-pyeong's heart.
Yeah, I actually didn't think the letters were dictated by the grandmother.
We saw it in a couple episodes, remember?
No, the first couple were when they started. But I think the letters went over the course of a year. So I don't think beyond the first several, when he started writing, I don't think they were dictated by the grandmother.
Maybe, we won't know.
Because I think over that course of that year that they exchanged letters, I think that's when they developed a real connection between the two of them, between So Dalmi and Han Ji-pyeong. And I think that's why he could confide his wish to her. Well, now they're all busy putting on this false front with So Dalmi in the fake Samsung Tech office, pretending that they're celebrating Nam Do-san's birthday. But things get more sensitive when So Dalmi makes the perceptive comment that wishes might seem trivial to others, but can be meaningful to those who have them. She supposes that either the wish had to do with fond memories with family, or the lack of having these memories and the wish to create them. This is where Han Ji-pyeong feels understood and responds without thinking. Meanwhile, Nam Do-san is barely listening when she says this, until he sees how Han Ji-pyeong reacts to So Dalmi.
Yes, he looks over and says, "Huh, why is he looking at her so intently?" Well, we already know that Nam Do-san likes So Dalmi, so if he starts to suspect that Han Ji-pyeong is vying now for her heart, his antenna is going to go up, right? Sunghee, you think that Han Ji-pyeong already likes So Dalmi, but I'm still not convinced. I think this birthday celebration is a mixed bag of emotions for Han Ji-pyeong. He sees the food prepared by the grandmother and remembers that she used to make food for him. And this is what triggers the memory. It's the food prepared by the grandmother. I still think that he's got kind of a passing interest in So Dalmi, but seeing her thoughtfulness towards Nam Do-san, seeing her passion about starting a business, and seeing her kindness and warm personality, I think he's looking at her in a different light.
Well, I think Han Ji-pyeong is someone who's kept his emotions bottled up inside. It took him a long time to open up to the grandmother. Even at the end, he was suspicious of her when he thought that she gave his money away. So I don't think he's going to be aware if he has overt feelings for someone. But what I think is that he has feelings for the person who wrote those letters to him all those years ago. Those letters were a comfort to Salami during a difficult time of her life. But they were also a source of comfort to him when he himself was having a difficult time. He was all alone as an orphan, seemingly without friends. The only person he became close to was the grandmother. But through the letters, he was connecting to someone his own age, to whom he could be honest and expressive, since they were semi-anonymous. And now it's starting to dawn on him that these letters are connected to the young woman he sees before him, who is showing herself to be perceptive and sensitive as she was before. And if you think about it, she came over to celebrate his birthday, to fulfill the wish that he expressed so long ago. So I agree that he's not in love with her at this point, but I think there's real feeling buried deep inside him.
Yeah, I agree with that. I also want to comment on how much fun they have during the game. This might be the first time in a long time, or maybe ever, that Han Ji-pyeong is just having fun, playing cards with no objective, with people who don't want anything from him in that moment. I mean, most families take it for granted because they've had those moments of playing games, but when you're an orphan, those are the moments that you were robbed of. And I think that's what Han Ji-pyeong was craving.
Oh, yes. That's right. And that's what he wanted, that feeling of closeness, of belonging. And it didn't really matter if it was Ghost Op or something else.
Right.
Well, at one point, So Dalmi asks Han Ji-pyeong if his blood type is A. So the reason she says this is that there is a belief in East Asia that blood type is correlated with personality. So personally, I know of no scientific basis for this, and Nam Do-san agrees with that. And I think most people regard it on the level of an astrology sign, kind of as a fun detail to talk about. But to summarize, blood type A people are thought to be conservative, introverted, and perfectionistic. Type B people are free thinkers and less affected by what other people think. AB people are highly intelligent and unpredictable. And type O people are well-rounded and easygoing. So I'm actually A, and I think the description does fit me.
Well, I'm O, and the description fits me too. You know, my mother-in-law is a big believer in this, so, you know, maybe there's something to this. Who knows? All right, well, Nam Do-san takes So Dalmi home, and she invites him to say hello to her grandmother, but he declines. He doesn't know the grandmother, and it's too risky, right? I think he's having a crisis. He really likes So Dalmi, and she appears to really like him back. But why does she like him? Is it because of him or who she believes him to be? This is kind of an existential question for him, and this is why he asks her what she likes about him. And then when all the things she mentions are from her past with Han Ji-pyeong, he continues to press. And finally, all she can come up with is that he has large hands. Oh boy. I'd have a crisis too.
Well, beyond just noting the size of his hands, the underlying implication is having large hands is supposed to mean that you're a generous person. I suppose it might mean that you can hold a lot in your hands when you give something to someone else. But you can see that the weight of all the pretense that they've constructed is starting to weigh on Nam Do-san. Everything that he has told or shown to So Dalmi is a lie. So if she likes him so much, is it because of this lie? Which is why he keeps pressing her to tell him what it is about him that she likes. He is desperately hoping that she'll say something that has to do with him now. And the fact is that most of what she thinks she knows about Nam Do-san personally is really Han Ji-pyeong. She says that he was her first love, but that was really Han Ji-pyeong. The letters were a great comfort to her, written by Han Ji-pyeong. He is still amazing and cool after all these years, a pretense created by Han Ji-pyeong.
Oh my God, poor Nam Do-san, he's having a crisis. He needs to win So Dalmi's love on his own. And this is making me think that there is a theme in this show, but particularly in this episode, of needing to prove something. Nam Do-san knows that he's not a hotshot CEO and he's not the letter writer, so he needs to prove to So Dalmi that he is worthy of her love. Wan In Jae is trying to prove that she can be a successful CEO on her own, and So Dalmi is trying to prove to her family and herself that she can be successful. Each of these three sailing off without a map with a lot to prove.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Each of her characters are striving to make it.
Yeah, it's also clear that So Dalmi and Nam Do-san are developing feelings for each other. Now, it's not clear if these feelings are based on reality, especially on So Dalmi's part, but those feelings are there. And now Nam Do-san wants to win her love on his own terms, which is why he rejects the clothing that Han Ji-pyeong bought for him. I think he needs to believe that she likes him or loves him for himself, not because of the fiction that he created with Han Ji-pyeong's help. I mean, Sang-hee, this is some deep and heavy existential stuff.
Yes, it is.
You know, he likes a girl for the first time, she likes him back, but it's based on a fiction.
That's right.
It'll mess with anyone's head.
Yes, right. Well, this is a really tough decision for Nam Do-san. You can see that it would be relatively easy if he just went with the help from Han Ji-pyeong to pretend to be something he's not, since you can see that So Dalmi is already taken with that image. But we have already seen that Nam Do-san, as an engineer, was always a stickler for the truth, even when it went against his interest, especially when it came to attracting women.
That's right.
So now, when it counts the most, he's not going to fake his way to winning So Dalmi's heart. Well, let's turn to the relationship between the grandmother and Han Ji-pyeong. She realizes that Han Ji-pyeong is doing a lot for So Dalmi. He reports to her on a regular basis about what's happening. And the grandmother says that So Dalmi's confidence is soaring. The grandmother is very grateful, but Han Ji-pyeong says that he hasn't done much. And then when the grandmother worries that So Dalmi will fall and get hurt, Han Ji-pyeong makes a promise. He promises that she won't get hurt. That is quite the promise. How is he so confident that he can make this happen?
That is a good question. Han Ji-pyeong and Nam Do-san are playing a dangerous game. Because if So Dalmi finds out that Nam Do-san did not really write the letters, she'll be crushed, and she'll be furious that they all deceived her. Her heart could get really broken because Nam Do-san is not who he says he is, and her dreams of starting a business may never come to fruition. So how does Han Ji-pyeong have the confidence that she won't get hurt? Maybe it's because he believes in himself. Through his work as a VC, he could make a lot of things happen, and he has already helped lots of people be successful. Maybe he believes that as long as he is in So Dalmi's life, she'll be okay because he cares for her and he has money. But it's kind of a ballsy promise. What do you think?
Well, I agree with the idea that he's always been a go-getter who has made things happen by force of will and action. And I think he's probably thinking that he just has to be a bridge to support Nam Do-san and So Dalmi until they can both get to know each other in real life. Once they spend real time together, their relationship can take off on its own, as well as to get their business off the ground, because once Samsung Tech gets going, then the lie can become a reality. But he's not taking into account how the heart works, and that things don't always work out as neatly as the plan.
Yep, 100%. Let's turn to the investors who mobbed the Samsung Tech office after Samsung won the Coda AI competition. Now, here's the problem. Samsung Tech has developed technology, but not a business. They don't even have a business plan because they've been focusing on the tech. In essence, Sang-hee, they're inventors. And the investors, I think, were being short-sighted. Somebody should have tried to work with Samsung Tech to perhaps patent their technology and secure licensing deals. Because that's what you do when you have technology, but not a business plan. But I recognize that this is a K-drama.
Right. Well, you know, that is exactly what Han Ji-pyeong said from the beginning.
Right.
That they didn't have a business plan, which is why he wasn't going to invest in their business. Well, I think the investors who crowded the Samsung Tech office were just looking to make a quick profit, not to invest long-term and support the company's development. Then Samsung Tech as well was completely unprepared for the onslaught of the investors who came to see them. Because aren't you supposed to be represented in such situations?
Yes.
You need an army, I would imagine, of consultants and lawyers to handle this. Thank goodness Han Ji-pyeong showed up when he did, because the boys were about to give away the store with respect to their intellectual property. Why did Han Ji-pyeong come back to the Samsung Tech office? Maybe he was checking up on Nam Do-san. Or maybe now that they have won the CODA competition, he has genuine interest in their company, but not in the get-rich-quick way that the other investors have.
Yeah, Chul-san and Yong-san are trying to get the upper hand by telling Han Ji-pyeong that Nam Do-san is dealing with So Dal-mi only because he was asked. They try to make the case that Han Ji-pyeong really owes Nam Do-san for what he's doing. And I think it works to a certain extent. And that's why Han Ji-pyeong buys all those clothes for Nam Do-san and even gives him etiquette lessons. But poor Nam Do-san, he can't even figure out the difference between a salad fork and a dessert fork.
Well, I have to hand it to Chul-san and Yong-san, because they very quickly turned the situation around from Han Ji-pyeong scolding them to having the upper hand. Now, of course, they know that Nam Do-san cares for So Dal-mi and would do anything for her anyway. But they also know that Han Ji-pyeong doesn't know that.
Yet.
So it was quick thinking on their part to guilt trip Han Ji-pyeong into thinking that he owes Nam Do-san instead of the other way around.
Oh my God, yes. There were some really funny scenes in this episode. And I really like how Chul-san and Yong-san provide comic relief with their commentary. And the grandmother is hilarious, as always.
Yes. I love that scene when they described how they developed their knitting club.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. They go through the whole scene. And you actually, did you notice that it was actually Chul-san's voice?
Yes.
Who said all the dialogue.
Right.
Including all the women who got chased away.
Right. And they're all kind of interested in Nam Do-san, but he just turns them away.
Well, he was so unperceptive,
right,
that
yes,
they had any interest in them. And
right,
he just stuck to science and the facts.
Right.
Well, let's turn to Sandbox. All of our leads have gotten into the first round, and now they're facing a 3-day hackathon. So, Joanna, tell us what a hackathon is.
Well, that is a good question. A hackathon is an intensive event, usually lasting anywhere from a few hours to several days, where programmers, designers, and other tech creatives come together to build software or hardware projects in a short period of time. The goal is to create a solution to a problem in a very short period of time. Now, my husband, for example, he participates in hackathons where strangers come together, form teams, and write software or port software for older hardware. And here's why. He's a big fan of vintage computing, and there's a whole community working to get really old computers working again and new software working in older environments. So he attends hackathons, and sometimes they get a lot done, and sometimes they don't. I've also participated, Sung-hee, in nonprofit hackathons, where they're like 24 hours, and in 24 hours, what can you get done for a specific charity, and different agencies participate. They're really fun. They're tiring, but they're really fun.
So are hackathons typically competitive like they are here at Sandbox?
They can be, but they don't have to be.
Ah, interesting.
So when my husband attends a hackathon, they're not competitive. They're different teams trying to do certain things, and they often try to coordinate the work too.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. So they're not all duplicating their efforts. Well, in this episode, our leads are participating in a 3-day hackathon, which is why they all brought suitcases. So imagine their surprise when they realize who's there. So seeing each other, So Dal-mi, Nam Do-san, and Won In-jae are all there. It's a revelation and leads to confrontation between them all. So Dal-mi wonders why her sister is there, since she's supposed to be the CEO of Nation Morning and return to the United States. And both So Dal-mi and Won In-jae wonder why Samsung Tech is there when they were already supposed to be a successful company with investors. Han Ji-pyeong, watching the live stream, is surprised to see So Dal-mi at Sandbox. And by the way, Won In-jae goes into the event with a disadvantage because her two developers have dropped out. And as you say, Joanna, it's a huge leap of faith to leave a stable job and work without pay. And evidently, the two developers couldn't do it. I'm personally surprised that they did it in the first place. So now Won In-jae doesn't have developers. But then again, So Dal-mi doesn't have a team.
Yeah, so the event starts. The participants are welcomed by Yoon Son-hak, the director of Sandbox. Now remember, we know her as the venture capitalist who had agreed to make an investment in Sodalmi's dad's company, Beidal.com. So is she now running Sandbox? Is she still a VC? Anyway, she welcomes the 400 participants.
Well, the process at Sandbox is as follows. So all of the participants are texted 50 topic words, and each participant responds with keywords that are most relevant to each topic. So based on who gets the most correct responses, 40 CEOs will be selected. Then the selected CEOs will assemble a team among the remaining Sandbox applicants. These teams will then compete in the hackathon. The investors in Sandbox will select 5 teams from the hackathon to be in the residency program.
Yeah, so now 40 CEOs have been selected and they have to select their teams. And, you know, this strikes me as a really interesting way to encourage team building. Now, you know, when my husband does a hackathon and he's with strangers, they kind of just work together for the few days or few hours. But if you're really trying to build a business, you often want to work with people that maybe you know a little bit. Like, think about it. Samsun came in as a team, and this is a team that's been working together for 3 years. Sodalmi, on the other hand, came in solo, and she clearly needs a team. So anyway, I'm not sure I'm crazy about this method of picking random people, because it takes a long time to become a team. And if you're going to have a startup, you need to be working with people that you trust, who will match your level of commitment, and who are willing to put in the same hard work that you are.
Well, this process does add drama and tension to the whole thing. But I suppose the CEO choosing team members would indicate their ability to persuade and win over teammates in a short time. Sodalmi and Wonjie are selected to be CEOs, but Nam Do-san is not. So maybe his strength is focusing on a specific problem, not being overall sensitive to trends. But in any case, he doesn't make the cut to be a CEO. And once again, he's crushed, because Sandbox is basically confirming what Han Ji-pyeong said, that he's not cut out to be a CEO. So now, what does his company do? In Sandbox, as well as in life, they need to find a CEO to succeed.
Yeah, so this is where the sisters come in. Sodalmi asks Nam Do-san if he will recruit her to be his company's CEO. Won In-jae asks the Samsung Tech boys to join her company. You see the difference? And now the Samsung boys have a big decision to make. Sodalmi has no experience, has never run a company, doesn't have a university degree, although I don't think they know this, and she has no experience with tech. What Sodalmi does bring is her spunk, her belief in Nam Do-san. And let's not forget that Nam Do-san wants his company to succeed so that he doesn't disappoint Sodalmi.
Well, Won In-jae looks like the obvious choice, if you think about it, at least on paper. She's already an experienced CEO. She's been the CEO of a major company, Nature Morning. This means she knows how to lead people, and she knows the mechanics of running a company. But what is she like to work for? She did have employees who were willing to follow her, even if it meant uncertain pay. But from what we have seen, she's haughty and dismissive. And then she makes the offer to recruit Samsung Tech to her team right after she mocked both Sodalmi and Nam Do-san by exposing his false pretenses.
Right.
Now, one thing I've realized over the years of working is that while you obviously need a minimum of ability and qualifications, when it comes to hiring someone for your team, what counts the most is character and integrity. Because you can teach almost any skill with enough instruction and practice, but you can't teach character and integrity.
Yeah, but the top job, who's going to teach Sodalmi? Nobody's got the experience at Samsung Tech. Well, let me ask you a question. At the very start of the episode, Nam Do-san says he encountered a bug and he crashed. And this bug is related to needing to make a choice of a CEO. Why did he refer to this as a bug and a crash?
Well, from what I could understand, it sounds like the computer program is based on certain starting conditions, which then determine the final outcome. And then if you're wrong about these starting conditions, then it can undermine your whole program. And this is the bug that will make your program crash. The condition that Namdosan didn't count on was that all three of them, Namdosan, Sodalmi, and One and Jay, would all be applicants at Sandbox. We could see how shocked and dismayed they all were to see each other there. This all came to a head when the three of them converged at the question, who will become the CEO of Samsung Tech?
You know, I had to think hard about this. I think the bug refers to him not being selected a CEO, because this stopped their plan from moving forward. Because if all three of them had been selected to be CEOs, then Samsung Tech still had a chance. So I think the crash is related to needing to make a choice for CEO. Now, this is a difficult and painful choice, and he didn't want to do it. But in the end, he chose Sodalmi. Now, why do you think he chose her?
Well, this was a very interesting decision. And I was impressed with Namdosan's thinking. Now, his friends assume that he is head over heels in love and so will not be able to think straight. They urge him to think rationally. But he is thinking very clearly, and he says his head and his heart say the same thing. Now, of course, we know that his heart goes out to Sodalmi. But his head realizes that if he has to give up being CEO of Samsung Tech, he wants the role to go to someone who will not override their concerns. He points out that one person asked to be recruited as CEO, while the other CEO offered to recruit them. One person will respect their business, while they will just follow the business of the other. Then, after explaining his rationale, he also does the smart thing by having his partners make the actual choice. Because in this way, all three of them will be committed to their choice, not dragged in unwillingly.
Yeah, I also think it's because Namdosan doesn't know One and Jay. Namdosan is not part of One and Jay's world. She's the unknown, and as you mentioned, she's haughty and she mocked him. Now, Sodalmi is also unknown, but he's already in love with her and she believes in him. I think he thinks that choosing Sodalmi means that he's sailing off without a map, but side by side with Sodalmi. And when you think of it that way, it doesn't sound like a bad journey at all. In fact, it sounds like an amazing journey. They already have the tech. Now they need to build a business, and he gets to do it with Sodalmi. They're going to sail off without a map, but they're going to do it together.
But, you know, I think that's the reason that his heart says. But he says his head also agrees with that choice.
Well, I'll tell you, there's some question here too, right? Because he says to his friends, you guys make the choice. And then he goes over to Sodalmi and offers his hand. Now, did the friends really choose Sodalmi? Because remember back when they were trying to get money from Han Ji-pyeong? They all agreed on money, and then he totally changes course and says, I don't want money. I want to get into Sandbox.
Oh, I think he went with his friend's choice.
You think so? I think so too. But he does have a history of not going with his friend's choices.
Right. But in this case, I think he specifically said, it's up to you, saying that to his friends.
Yeah.
And I think he convinced them with his argument.
I think you're right about that. I think so, because like you said, if they went to work for One and Jay, they work for her and Samsung Tech disappears.
Right, exactly.
Right, because now they're working for her. But if they hire a CEO, someone who will respect the company, and they know that Sodalmi will do that,
right,
then they have a shot at actually doing something with the tech that they've developed.
Exactly, right. So I think that's what made the decision, is that Sodalmi will support them, as opposed to them working for One and Jay and just being her employees to do her bidding.
Yeah.
But then what happens to 1NJ? She needs developers, so she's going to have to recruit some at this event. Now, she does still have plenty of time left in the hour, so I think she'll find a team. So I wouldn't count her out.
Oh, God, not at all. But imagine the surprise of the three people watching the live stream. Han Ji-pyeong knows that Samsung Tech will be there, but why are Sodalmi and 1NJ there as well? Now, we also know that Han Ji-pyeong is ambivalent about Samsung Tech getting into Sandbox. He didn't want them to get in, but just in case they do, he wants to be their mentor. And presumably, this is so he can fulfill his promise to the grandmother to not let Sodalmi get hurt. So another person watching the live stream is the grandmother, and the grandmother realizes that Won and Jae is there as well, and the mom realizes that So Dalmi is there as well. So you have three people who are very invested in what happens to these three.
Well, something else happens at this event. Nam Do-san admits that he is not the hotshot CEO that he pretended to be, and his company does not have investors. So he faked it all, and he admits as much to So Dalmi, but she doesn't seem upset. So why do you think that is?
She was probably surprised, but she was with her sister, and she was not going to get upset in front of her sister, and she was not going to throw Nam Do-san under the bus. Plus, she knows what it's like to bluff. Remember, she bluffed her way through that networking event. So who is she to blame Nam Do-san for bluffing about his company to impress her? But here's the thing. I don't think anybody yet has wondered why Han Ji-pyeong has been part of the charade and the bluffing.
Yes, that's a good question. I don't think they thought that far.
That's true. They will eventually.
Well, it was quite forgiving and understanding of So Dalmi to recognize that Nam Do-san was bluffing, just like she was. The other thing is that I think she's seen the silver lining to the cloud of finding out that Nam Do-san lied to her. When she went to church to pray, we learn that what she prayed for was a companion to walk with her through the difficult journey ahead. She has found Nam Do-san here at Sandbox as the unexpected answer to her prayer.
Yeah. Hey, let's talk about the ending. First, we see that director Yoon of Sandbox is delighted to see that Won and Jae is the daughter of the entrepreneur that her VC firm almost funded. The man who said he wished he could fall on sand the way his daughters fall on sand at the playground so they won't get hurt.
You know, I actually thought it was quite the surprise when we learned that it was Won and Jae who wrote that on her application, because I thought we were led to believe that it would be So Dalmi. Because her father told the story to Chairman Yoon about So Dalmi, not Won and Jae.
Yes, and also there's a question about which daughter is on the swing when you have the flashback with the dad.
Well, the dad talked about Dalmi when he told the story.
Understood. But then when Won and Jae is writing her application, you see the same flashback. So which daughter was it?
That's a good question. We'll have to find out. Well, more importantly, the AI speaker, Young Shil, warns of someone who seems like a gentle breeze at first, but who may turn into a strong winter wind. And this person may be someone that Han Ji-pyeong or Nam Do-san has met in the past, but it's unclear who might have met this person. In fact, it could be anyone in the room, since when Young Shil gives his prediction, they're all there.
Ah, right.
And indeed, we see the Korean-American judge or board member from CODA. He's just landed at Incheon Airport, and he says, "Hello, Korea." So who is he, and why is he in Korea?
Well, we can only imagine that he is in Korea to meet the Samsung tech coders, but I think he's going to be bad news, like Young Shil warns.
Yes. Well, Young Shil is basically telling us that.
Right. He's a little slick, isn't he? Well, let's talk about some K-drama elements. What do we got?
Well, we have clothing, and I love the suit that Han Ji-pyeong got for Nam Do-san. It's a double-breasted style, but the buttons are not obvious, and I thought it was very flattering for a tall guy like Nam Do-san.
Oh my God, he looked amazing in that suit.
Yes, didn't he? That was a very nice suit. I also like the purple sweater that So Dalmi wears. It has this very pretty knit yoke around the collar, and it's a type of sweater that I would love to knit myself.
Have you also noticed just how fashionable Han Ji-pyeong is?
Oh, yes, that's right.
I mean, the pinstripe suit that he wore when he went to visit the Samsung Tech boys, you know, and save them from getting their tech stolen. I'm not sure I love the suit, but it was quite striking.
Yes, that's true. And he wore it with a t-shirt.
Right.
Not with a collared shirt.
And he's always wearing sneakers.
Right. Well, for food, the grandmother prepares amazing food for So Dalmi's birthday outing with Nam Do-san. It looked like she made a variety of banchan.
Yeah, it looked like a beautiful chirashi bowl, which is rice with raw fish, but I don't think she had raw fish in there.
Yeah, I kind of think not for a picnic.
Yeah. And by the way, we've talked in the past about how businesses are sometimes named after the children of the business owners. And I just realized that Chungmyung Corn Dogs is the grandmother's corn dog stand, and it's named after her son.
That's right. That seems to be quite the practice. We had a wrist grab. Han Ji-pyeong grabs Nam-do-san's wrist and tells him that he's lending him his expensive watch, not giving it to him. And it appears that this watch is worth more than his white Mercedes convertible.
And that scene was quite funny.
Yes.
Because the two of them are kind of tussling over the watch.
Yes, right. We had holding hands. Seodami and Nam-do-san end up holding hands while on the bus. And I was actually quite impressed that Seodami just very naturally put her hand in Nam-do-san's hand without the usual are we going to hold hands and are we going to touch pinkies?
Right.
All right. We had product placement. Now, that super expensive watch, I couldn't tell exactly what the make was, but I'm guessing it was a Patek Philippe.
Oh.
Because those watches are fabulously expensive. So I looked up some relatively simple models that looked similar, and they were in the $50,000 to $70,000 range.
Oh my God. That's why Han Ji-pyeong said that watch is worth more than the car.
Yes. Though, frankly, I would think the car would be worth more than that.
Well, maybe it was a really fancy Patek Philippe.
Right, exactly. Yeah, the $50,000 to $70,000, no, that's not good enough. All right, now with respect to an orphan, we're seeing another aspect of what it was like for Han Ji-pyeong as an orphan. He missed out on the simple pleasures of sharing fun activities with family during the holidays. And then when he writes that wish in the letter to Seodami, he's alone, just watching Chuseok celebrations on TV. All right, we have the clenched fist. Nam-do-san clenches his fist when Won and Jae challenges him and asks why he's at Sandbox.
Yeah. Hey, did you have a favorite line? So I had two. And the first one is by Nam-do-san when he's talking to Han Ji-pyeong. And he says, "How in debt are you that it can't be paid with your wealth?"
Ooh.
It was a really interesting question, right? And very perceptive of him, right? He's kind of like, what kind of debt is this that you have to do all of this to pay it back?
Right. It's on another dimension than just money.
Right. And then the other line that I liked was when they were playing Go Stop, Seodami was sort of giving hints to Nam-do-san and allowing him to win or helping him to win. And Han Ji-pyeong says, "You're supposed to learn by losing."
Mm.
And I thought, wow, there was so much in what he said. I mean, he was like, look, don't help him. Losing has its own merits. But I think he was also kind of talking about Nam-do-san, right? Like maybe he needs to lose a little bit, or maybe he has a lot to learn by losing. I don't know. It's just a really interesting line.
Right. Well, certainly Han Ji-pyeong learned the hard way, given his background.
Right.
Well, I like the line that we opened with when Dalmi says, "What's ordinary to one person can be extraordinary to another." And I think that speaks to how you never know how people feel about things and what's important to them. And everyone's experience is so unique and particular to themselves.
Yeah. So where are we at the end of the episode?
Well, three of our main characters have converged at the start of the sandbox competition, with Nam-do-san being exposed as not being the hotshot CEO of a successful company. Seodami and Won and Jae are selected to be CEOs of their respective teams, while Nam-do-san is not. But to move to the next round, Nam-do-san must choose a CEO for his team, asking the inexperienced but supportive Seodami to lead Sansan-tech over her sister Won and Jae. Youngshil warns about the arrival of a mysterious figure as an unknown Korean-American man has just landed in South Korea.
Wow, I can't wait to see how the hackathon turns out. And you gotta believe that Samsung Tech has the advantage because they have really good tech. But none of them have any experience at creating a business plan at Samsung Tech. Neither does Seodami. So Won and Jae has the upper hand in that area. And then how do Han Ji-pyeong, Nam-do-san, and the grandma maintain the charade about the letters? Like I said, I'm totally stressed about this.
Oh, the letters. Ah. Well, we promised our listeners that we would talk about the amazing Nam Joo-hyuk, the actor who plays Nam Do-san. Nam Joo-hyuk was born on February 22, 1994, and he is a South Korean model and actor. He began his career as a model and appeared in several music videos before making his screen debut in 2014 with the television series The Idol Mermaid. He gained wide recognition with his role in the dramas Who Are You? School 2015 and Weightlifting Fairy Kim Bok-joo in 2016.
Well, in 2016, he was in Scarlet Heart Rio. He was one of the princes.
Yes, I remember.
And then in 2018, he had his film debut with The Great Battle. And then he achieved further prominence with Startup and 2521. And listeners, we discussed 2521 in season 4 of K-Drama Chat. Man, did we love the show. That was a really, really great season. So please check it out. And check this out. In 2021, Nam Joo-hyuk was included in the Forbes 30 Under 30 power list.
Well, you can see how he was a model. He's tall and lean, and he looked amazing no matter what he's wearing, even those flannel shirts.
Yeah. By the way, interesting that he's not a singer, unlike so many K-drama stars, although he did sing on one of the songs in the 2521 soundtrack, the one where the entire cast sings. I love this guy. I absolutely adored him in 2521. And, you know, he's been accused of not being a good actor, but I think Startup and 2521 really put those criticisms to rest.
I think he's very good at playing downtrodden characters who seem to have lost hope.
Yeah.
Before we go, what are you watching? I'm kind of all over the place with what I'm watching. I did see the first several episodes of Uncanny Counter, which were very good. But then I got distracted by Malcolm's glowing reviews of Dynamite Kiss, which I'm enjoying. It's much lighter in tone, which is what I was in the mood for. It hits pretty much every trope in K-drama element, but it's fun and the two leads are great. Then I'm interested in starting Pro Bono with Jung Kyung-ho, whom I love.
Man, I'm interested in Pro Bono too. I had a very busy week, so I was not able to watch much. I am, however, on episode 6 of Because This Is My First Life, because you all said this is such a great show and it's leaving Netflix.
Yes.
I have to tell you, though, I'm enjoying Because This Is My First Life, but I hate that somehow everyone seems to expect that women will clean the apartment, put out the recycling, and do the dishes. I mean, everyone seems to believe this, including and especially the mothers and all the women.
Well, I think that's one of the points that they're making in the show, that women are oppressed by the patriarchy. And these practices are so ingrained, I think it's hard to escape them. And as for the main lead doing the housework, I think that was part of the rental agreement, because she got the apartment because the prior tenant, who was a man, failed to live up to this part of the agreement.
Yeah, I agree. I'm enjoying it, so I'll push through with it. And I know that you loved it and Seven Seas loved it. And by the way, listeners, there's another fantastic show leaving Netflix, and that is Hotel de Luna. Hotel de Luna is the very first K-drama that I watched. I've watched it, I don't know, maybe 5 or 6 times at this point between just regular watching and watching it for the podcast. I love this show. So if you haven't watched Hotel de Luna, run and watch this show on Netflix. And listeners, one more thing. We are thinking about our final episode for 2025, and we want to do a recap show where we talk about what we thought were the best shows and who were the best actors and actresses in 2025. So please comment on the blog with your best shows or send us a message on Instagram, send us an email via the blog, or send us an audio file that we can include in the podcast. So that'll probably be the last episode for the year. Tell us your faves from 2025.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that Hotel de Luna is leaving. That was the inaugural show for season 1 of K-Drama Chat.
Exactly. Yes.
So that is quite significant.
I know. I'm sad. I'm going to check to make sure that it's on Viki, because I'm a little stressed at the idea that I won't be able to watch it whenever I want to, because every once in a while, I'll catch little snippets of it.
Right. Well, it's very meaningful.
All right. Next week, we will recap and analyze episode 5 of Startup, and we will also talk about Kang Hana, the actress who plays Won In Jae. I'm Joanna.
And I'm Sung Hee.
This show was edited by John Uriarte, our wonderful audio engineer. Graphics were done by Alex Pineda, and the website is maintained by MJ Kato.
Don't forget to subscribe to the show, leave a 5-star rating, post a review in your favorite podcast site, and comment on each episode on our website, kdramachat.com. If you're on social media, please follow and message us on Instagram at kdramachat. And if you like this podcast, please share it with your friends. Bye.